Wham! Talk 1600. You're catching the drift. Conservative talk. Intelligent conversations on local, state, and national issues with Gary Wallings, chief editor of the Current newspaper and Current Online. Join in the conversation at 734-822-1600. And now, your host, Gary Wellings.
And good Saturday afternoon. Thanks for tuning in to Catch Our Drift. Joining me in studio, Ipsy Ed Bondarenko.
It is a good Saturday afternoon. Oh, it's a heat wave.
It's a heat wave.
30s. Yeah.
It was 43 in the parking lot when I came in.
Really? Wow.
Yeah, it's amazing. So just great. Well, thanks for tuning in and joining us. What we do on The Drift every Saturday is go over the news we put on thedailydrift.com. It's the
news you need to know.
There you go. Yes. And if you miss this show live, you can catch it Saturday and Sunday evenings on Talk Radio, AmericaTalkRadio.us. That's Saturday and Sunday evenings. It's also on Spreaker, SoundCloud, YouTube, and always archived at thedailydrift.com. So you can catch up all the shows we've done since the very beginning there. So it's pretty
awesome. A lot of wisdom. A lot of wisdom.
We're getting down to 300 shows, I think. Pretty close here.
It's a lot of foolishness, too.
That's a lot of foolishness. Yeah. 300 shows of foolishness, actually. But well, despite all the big news that's going on, we've got some great guests today. We've got Michigan Senate candidate Sandy Pensler on the line. He's going to be joining us shortly here. And then we've got Congressman Tim Walberg joining us at the bottom of the hour to give us some updates fresh out of Washington because he's stuck there. And he contacted me earlier and said, hey, you want to give you some updates? I'm like, that's perfect. So
he wants to tell us what was in the memo, right?
We can ask about it. Yeah. That's all we can do, right? But let's take care of a little business. Bork Jennings Funeral Homes. Folks, don't wait until it's too late. Make your arrangements for passing of loved ones or yourself ahead of time by contacting Bork Jennings Funeral Homes. There's more to the end of life than just a casket, right? Mm-hmm. There's plans that need to be made. There are things that have to be done. And Bork Jennings Funeral looks at the big picture. Right. You can go to Borek, B-O-R-E-K, Jennings, J-E-N-N-I-N-G-S.com, BorekJennings.com, or you can call 810-231-0200. It's a very serious matter. I hate to bring that up, but you know what? In the end, none of us get out alive, right? Yep. And so think ahead, not just for your sake, but for your family and your loved ones, because they shouldn't have to be worrying about details when they're grieving over you.
So and even if you don't plan to buy, just go in and get familiar with the process.
Yeah, get the information, prep yourself a little bit, and they're great people. The Bork Jennings family, they've got funeral homes in Hamburg, Howell, Manchester, and Brooklyn, Michigan. So a great group of people, very dedicated to helping your family get through this the trying issue. Yep. Okay, so we're going to bring on Sandy Pensler, who's running for Michigan's U.S. Senate seat as a Republican. Sandy, welcome to the show.
Great to be here.
Glad you were finally able to get in and join us. So we want to get a little bit about you, and then we'll quiz you a little bit and get you some of the information and where you're standing on certain issues, because goodness knows, Sandy, there's a whole lot of issues to deal with right now. So why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and how, as a very successful businessman and educator, you've gotten to be where you are today?
Sure. Happy to do that. But before I start, I heard you're having Tim come on after me, and I just want to give a big shout-out to the Michigan Republican delegation for working hard, getting the tax bill passed with no help from the Democratic delegation and putting their heads out on the line before trying to repeal Obamacare. So big hats off to Tim.
Absolutely.
So let me tell your audience a little bit about me, and then we can get into policy and or value issues. My background, grew up in Michigan, grew up in Detroit, 7 Mile in Livernois, for those that know where that is. Went off to school, came back a variety of times, bought a company here, moved my family back. My parents were here. They're gone now. My grandparents also were here. My background really as a training chemical engineer and then a master's in economics and then a law degree, but really my business training was done primarily, I think, in New York, where I was at a major investment bank, a variety of them leading turnarounds. So turnarounds for companies like Chrysler, Time Warner, worked with the board at Norfolk Southern, GE, and a whole host of companies, boards, and chairmen.
Yeah, and let's stop there for a second, Sandy, because
sure. People
need to understand how important that is. You are not just another politician. You are a successful businessman, much like Donald J. Trump. You're bringing that focus of pro-business because, you know what, in the end, America's business is business. And if you want to have people making more money, you have to have a pro-business mentality. And that's what you're bringing to the table, just like Donald Trump brought to the table.
No, I couldn't agree more, and I think I have another added little twist. I also taught economics for a while, both at Yale and Harvard. And so I understand how to create incentives, what drives the economy. And when I hear some of the liberal economists spewing what I can't characterize really other ways than BS, I can cut through it and understand what the difference between wheat and chaff. But absolutely bringing those principles, market principles, dynamics of competition to the policy discussion, just like President Trump has done, is I think a feature I bring that's pretty rare in politics. That especially when coupled with my economics backgrounds, I know I've done it before. I've created my own company. I've built things from scratch. I didn't inherit things from my parents other than great values.
Well, Sandy,
I didn't go into their companies. I've built things from scratch. I've grown them, and I've turned around very large companies and smaller companies that I've bought. And I think I can bring that those skill sets to Washington and really bring them to bear to help Michiganders and to continue to grow the economy that's begun to really take off with Trump as president but still has a long ways to go.
Sandy, I appreciate one thing about you. You have disproved that old adage that those who can't do teach. As it seems that you've done both. And it looks like you have the ability to explain to other people what you've done. So it's nice to see the contributions you've made to the Michigan economy and as a successful businessman. What would you do as a state senator, I'm sorry, as a senator for the state to promote the economy in Michigan?
Let me go through sort of a litany of things, and when they've started to get a little too long, just cut me off. Look, I think what we saw in the tax bill was one of the first great steps we have for growing jobs. Debbie is sort of a counterpoise to everything that I bring. I understand the economy and have taught at major universities. She's never held a private sector job. I've always been in the private sector. So when it came to lowering taxes, decreasing regulations, and encouraging companies to repatriate funds that were stuck abroad from a crummy, a broken tax system, she wanted to block it. So I think there's still more to do. I think it was the first step, and it's going to be rocket fuel for the economy, but there's more to do. We've started to turn around this huge, massive ship. I guess that's an understatement of the regulatory nation into one that really encourages entrepreneurship and individual actions. And I think that road that Trump has really directed us on has a long way to go, but he needs help.
Yeah, absolutely.
We're at a historic juncture. We're seeing it almost every day. We see it with the government shutdown. And Michigan has the ability to really change the direction of the country by bringing another Republican senator, especially one that understands business and can lead in the Senate, to bear. So start out with jobs. Go to next to great jobs. You need two things. One, you need trade deals that are fair. I was just talking to one of the division heads of Ford yesterday, and he was talking about how when they set up in China, their joint venture structure has to have 50% plus Chinese ownership. And it's sort of a foregone conclusion that the mobility ideas, the code, is going to get really kind of stolen. I don't know how else to put it, by the Chinese. It's just not a fair deal. When they want to invest here, they can buy a U.S. company.
I had
when
recently,
we want to invest there, we got to have a 50% Chinese stakeholder.
I was informed recently,
Sandy. Time and time again, and Trump's pointed it out, but there's only so many times that people listen. But we got to work on these deals to make them fair for Americans. And we've got to change our education system so that we don't just reward seniority. The Michigan Education Association endorsed Gretchen the other day. My gosh, it's not about seniority. It's about performance. And the best way to get performance into schools is competition. We live it every day in my companies. When you have competition, you get better or you don't survive. And we got to bring that to the education system. And Trump and DeVos, I think, are doing that with choice. But it's being blocked by career politicians like Debbie Stabenow, who just are backed by these special interest unions. It's not the teachers. The teachers want to do right by the students. They love the incentive pay. But this tradition of rewarding based on seniority and making that the benchmark of how you gauge everyone's crazy, and it hurts our kids. It hurts our country. Let's talk about the Great Lakes. So here's one where Debbie and I agree. Everybody in Michigan, we love the Great Lakes, but boy, do we have different ways of approaching it. She's yelling and screaming about China and the Paris Climate Accord, how terrible it was to back out. Well, really, what we backed out of was having the people of Muskegon, Lansing, I guess your guys are in Ann Arbor now, Detroit, shooting our money over to Guangzhou, Beijing, and Mumbai so that they can implement things, and we send them our money to do that. It's crazy. Let's use that money to fix the Great Lakes, build trails up along the Great Lakes all throughout Michigan and other environmental projects. Let's not send it over to China.
Okay. Well,
and
then,
by the way, when you're negotiating with the president and his budget, if you said no to everything 50 different times, she's just the resistance, and then something comes up that she really doesn't like the Great Lakes cut in funding. Oh, but that one, I didn't like everything else, but this one I really don't like. Well, you know what? That doesn't work very well. I'll put the Michigan interest first. I'll work with the White House. We'll get things like the F-25 wing that should have gone over to Selfridge Air Force Base. We'll get things like the missile silo defense that should go over at Fort Custer. But we can't with resistance being what holds Michigan back, being the representatives in Congress. I'll stop and let you ask some more questions because I don't want to go on too
right.
long.
Well, wow, now that's rare. That's really different right there.
Well, you hit one of them for me. So I know you're not one of the climate change nuts. So that obviously right there puts you in good standing with me. Now, Ed, did you have a question that you wanted to get in?
Well, in general, I wanted to know what is informing you to – you're a successful businessman. I assume you're doing well. It's not that, you know, this would be, like Theron says, the best job I ever had. You know, you obviously don't want to be – well, I wouldn't think you'd want to be a career politician. What motivates you for this – to get into this position?
So let me first talk about career politician. I'm 61. I'm too old to be a career politician.
Exactly.
That's not in the cards. So this would be – yes, I've been very successful in my businesses. I've been very fortunate. The country's been wonderful for me. My first and foremost job is my family. I've got a wonderful family. But I look out there and say, you know what, kids, I think you'll probably be okay, but I'm not so sure about my grandkids. I don't have any yet. They're younger, my kids. But China is an imperialistic force. And if you think they're in the backwaters with old production methods, you're just wrong. You're 40 years ago. If you listen to President Xi's speech, which he made about China 2025, it's an imperialistic force. They have a different view of how to drive their economy. They think it's better. And everything in China goes up through President Xi. That's not how I want my kids, my grandkids, to live. We live in this wonderful free country with a market system that lets individuals have self-realization of where they want to go, what they want to do, and be different. I grew up, my grandparents, they both came to the U.S. Basically avoiding death. So on one side, it was my one grandfather came over who was wanted dead or alive for speaking out against the Tsar. On the other side, the grandfather came over, and 2 or 3 years later, they rounded everyone up in the town. The Nazis came in, machine gunned them all, and burned them in this little enclave. So I grew up with American exceptionalism, and it is the greatest force for good in the world. And it lets individuals, it is still a remarkably unique experiment that lets individuals determine what they want to do, determine their own course of government, and this whole notion of by the people, I think, is at risk unless we really impose some of our traditional values of freedom in business and not having elites in Washington who don't understand, and I want to use a bad word term, don't understand much about how to run lots and lots of businesses in Michigan. And they want to direct them from Washington, and they've never been inside one. They don't understand them, like Debbie. She's never had a private sector job. But yet, they're going to tell us how to run the business. And they think they're doing good things, but time and time again, they get it wrong with unintended consequences. So let me take a specific example in what I call means-tested entitlements, sort of the food stamps, the energy assistance, Section 8 housing. There are 126 means-tested entitlement programs. So what have they done? They have hurt, in my mind, most of the people that they've been trying to help, because they reach out and say, we're going to fund you based on household income. So what's happened is, in the poorer communities, dads have been driven out of houses. And in Detroit, which I'm acutely aware of, you're in the 70s and 80% for single family children being born into single parent households. Because the dads are driven out of the households by these by a lot of these programs. It's not that they intended to drive the dads out. They're just not thinking. We got to change those entitlement systems to be springboards to work, not to encourage people to stay in dependency and despondency. Work is incredibly fulfilling. It provides purpose and meaning, and people want to work. And what Trump's done by driving the economy, cutting taxes, increasing depreciation rates so that there's big capital expenditures, you're getting people that were out of the workforce, out of the labor force participation, coming back into the workforce. Unemployment's at its lowest level in minority communities, in most of them ever. And that's what's really the story. It's not, oh, we called something a bad name. No, we're giving opportunity, purpose, and meaning to people. Yep. And it's an incredibly liberating and important thing that's going on in the
country. So I take it you are pro-Trump.
Yes.
Okay. All right.
So let me caveat.
Hold on, Sandy.
He might go down on his policy levels. I think Donald Trump has been not good, but spectacular.
Good,
some of the personal issues, do they bother me from time to time? Sure. But that's what got him elected. People wanted a bull in a China store, and he's breaking things up. It's not easy.
Okay. So, Sandy, I've got a question from a caller for you, and I can preface this by saying, with your background in business, successful background in business, with your background in education, and also now with your law degree, caller Joe from Wyandotte's got a question for you on Debbie and a possible debate. Derek, you want to bring Joe on? Go ahead, Joe.
Thank you. I have several concerns. One, his former pro-choice stance. I think he's just a pleno now. His prior stance for single-payer health care. But, yeah, I was calling about debates, and it has more so to do with a GOP primary debate. Why is Sandy Pensler afraid to debate Bob Carr? afraid his political...
Oh, that's wonderful. Look, if you're working for Bob, that's great. I'm not afraid to debate anybody. When the debates are appropriate, which is, I think, when people are in closer to the election, people have registered and shown that they can get the signatures needed to get on the debate so that we don't waste a lot of time with candidates that have neither funds or the ability to get on the ballot, I'm happy to debate the candidates.
Okay, so you'll be up for debates both in the primary and more importantly, even against
Debbie.
More importantly,
in the general, because what Debbie's been able to do is she's run away from her record in prior elections. So she's avoided running on her record. She's put out ads, and she talks about legislations that she's authored because she hasn't gotten anything enacted. Well, my 14-year-old daughter can author legislation. It doesn't mean it's going to be enacted. It probably has a better chance of being enacted than some of the stuff that Debbie puts on her website that she's authored. So she runs to the right and tries to present herself as a low taxation, low regulation candidate. I authored this bill when the reality couldn't be further from the truth, and I will hold her to her record, which has been just the Schumer Pelosi backer that she always is.
Yeah.
She is constantly looking, just like she was yelling about chip funding. Well, when it came time to really have a chip funding extension for 6 years and keep the government going here, she didn't back it. She backed, instead, she went for the shutdown.
She backed Schumer.
Played partisan politics, backed Chuck Schumer for this stopping of government services, did not back the continuing resolution, even though it was short-term, said, no, we got to
must be
illegal Jim. Immigrants instead.
Right. Hey, look,
we will hold her to her record. I will have the funds, unlike other candidates in the past and others in the present that are trying to run, to hold her to her record. And that'll take a lot of funds because, as you can see, she's already raised $7.5 million, and she ran with $14 the last time and $12 the time before that when our Republican candidates, which were good candidates, Bouchard and Hoekstra,
Sandy,
had $3 and $4 million.
We've only got a couple more minutes. I understand your contention about debating later, but right now we think three candidates: Bob Carr, maybe John James, who I don't see much of
Never
anymore,
hear from him.
And then of course yourself. And if people are wondering, well, which horse am I going to back heading towards the primary? We need to know what these distinctions are. So I would like to see something done between the three candidates to help clarify, where basically you guys can go at each other's throats instead of us having to go at your throats.
I agree. At some point, and look, the election, the primary is August, beginning of August, and I'm completely open for that. What I don't want to do is debate somebody who's not going to get the signatures and not get on the ballot.
Right. Well, so, I'm going to make this offer, Sandy. Bob Carr has offered we can do a round table, so it doesn't have to be like the formal debate in the gymnasium or something. If we can get you into the studio and we'll do a round table, me, you, Ed, and Bob Carr maybe, because John James is never – I don't think he's a serious candidate.
He's not returning calls.
He doesn't return any calls. I haven't seen him anywhere.
And I appreciate you taking ours, Sandy.
Yeah. So, you know, and this show is always open to you, Sandy, to call into, or if you want to come sit and talk policy with us. And if we can get one more, Derek, do we have time to get Tom's tax question in? We've got a caller. Tom in Detroit's got a question on taxes for you, Sandy, if you can take it. Go ahead.
Yeah, I just wanted to make the comment on the this new tax bill that is going into effect. The speculation is that now with the lower corporate rates, that our corporation will be competitive with other corporations overseas, with foreign corporations. And it's my understanding as soon as the rate was lowered, China lowered their rate to zero. And it goes to the whole idea of the direct taxation. Why can't we speculate that, you know, if we didn't use direct taxation, which was originally in the Constitution.
Tom, we're out of time. We're hitting the hard break. Sandy, you got a quick answer for that?
Quick answer is the changes we did will make corporate America much, much more competitive. We see the business.
Okay,
all right. Business is giving their bonuses already and bringing back expenditures.
People are always on the go, driving to work, running errands. How do they keep informed? They listen to Wham Talk 1600 just like you. If you're a business owner, your message can reach these people wherever their travels take them. People tune to Wham Radio for the latest issues, discussed by hosts like Joe Pags, Faron X, and Dana Lesh. And they'll stay tuned for your message as well. Call 734-971-1600 today and advertise your business with Wham Radio and whamradio.com. Whamradio.com.
Fox News Radio, I'm Karen McHugh. President Trump calling the government shutdown the Schumer shutdown, but the Senate minority leader begs to differ.
So here we are on the first anniversary of the president's inauguration, mired in the Trump shutdown. It doesn't have to be this way. We can get big things done.
New York's Chuck Schumer. Meanwhile, women's marches are happening in cities across the country. Why march?
I'm here because I have to be. Things have gotten way worse than I ever thought that they would. And I'm afraid that our government's being eroded and all the rights that I think a lot of us have taken for granted over the years need to be protected.
Politics aside, it's all about women and women's rights.
Those women on the Mall in Washington. Fox News. We report, you decide.
Your bridge to recovery and wellness is WellBridge. WellBridge is redefining the rehabilitation and nursing care experience with the most amazing care facilities you've ever seen. All WellBridge locations offer a resort-like atmosphere, and their driving goal is to provide each guest with an epic experience. Here's former patient Evelyn Danielson from Brighton.
When I got into my room, there were happy faces welcoming me. The PT people there peeked around the door the next morning and said, "You're going to walk with us." And I said, "Oh, no, I can't." But I did. They don't push you. They lead you very kindly. And the next thing you know, you're doing it. They have a wonderful attitude.
For rehabilitation and nursing care, ask for something epic. Ask for WellBridge. In Brighton, Fenton, Novi, and Pinckney. Now looking for talented nurses and certified nurse assistants to join their growing team, WellBridge invites everyone to learn more about them at thewellbridgegroup.com. WellBridge, your bridge to recovery and wellness starts here.
It's been 5 years since we met Kelly Brighton, just before her weight loss surgery.
I was almost 300 pounds. Because of the Michigan Bariatric Institute, I've lost the weight. I now have the tools to keep it off. I am a better mom, I am a better wife, and I'm just a better Kelly Brighton, I think.
Begin your journey. Try a free monthly educational seminar at St. Joe's Livingston. Visit stjoeshealth.org/MBI to learn more.
And welcome back. Thanks for tuning in to catch our drift. Joining me in studio, Ipsy Ed Bondarenko.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, so we're supposed to have Tim calling in at 1:30, and I might have to have you go through that and tweet him for, or text him for me. Go into text, and you might hopefully catch him in there. But anyway.
Password.
No password. Give me the back.
Yeah, okay. I'll talk. You text.
Yeah, so why don't you do our sponsor this half hour, and I'll see if I can put in a
Our
email.
Sponsor this half hour. I can't even talk about our sponsor this half hour. Is Burroughs Roadhouse, established in 1928. You know, it's a destination place. It's somebody. It's a, one of those places you want to drive to go eat for the atmosphere, like a Frankenmuth, you know? Someplace where, hey, the food's really good, but the atmosphere is really good. And it's a historical venue. And, you know, they've got comedy shows Friday nights. They've got music comes up. They've got Gary tells me they got great drinks, great bartender. In fact, Gary's going to tell you more about that
Eric,
right now.
Eric the bartender, yeah. Burroughs is one of those destination places, without a doubt, because they do comedy shows, they do music, and atmosphere is – it's called Burroughs, right? Burroughs Roadhouse, because it was originally like part of the Burroughs Computer Corporation way back in the day, data entry or whatever it was back then. And they had this vacation type place for employees and family of the Burroughs Corporation. And over the years, it's evolved, whatever. And now it's a restaurant. In a well-run restaurant. So there's coupons in the current, C-O-U-R-A-N-T-online.com. Check out those coupons in the current.
For the coupons, you need to know.
Yep. And then comedy shows every Friday. Next week, January 26th, is Andy Beningo and Nate Armbruster. And so they've got great shows, great music, great food, and they do pour a mean drink. Absolutely. So there you go. 810-227-6000. It's a good idea to call ahead and make reservations. 810-227-6000 or burrows-roadhouse.com.
What? How did I get all that in that quick?
Wow,
right?
You're good.
Yeah, so the Schumer shutdown, right? And that's what people have to call this and tweet it, Facebook it, talk it up at the gas station lines, whatever. This is the Democrats' fault. No ifs, ands, or buts.
Yep, yep, yep.
All right.
Rather support immigrants. Illegal immigrants, let's put it that way, than American citizens, than American military, than American children.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And they are, the Democrats are doing a huge disservice to the Dreamer kids by not cutting the deal with the president and the GOP because they've made the offer. And joining us on the phone, Congressman, 7th District for Michigan, U.S. Congressman Tim Walberg.
What
Congressman Tim, welcome to the show.
Good to be with you and appreciate you. Being one of the media sources that tries to get out the facts.
Yeah, well, I'm so glad you got hold of us today because I was looking for an update, and sure enough, when I saw your text, I was like, yes.
Are you ice fishing again?
No. Well,
no,
it's probably...
No, I really am not. I'm sitting here in a 2436 House of Rayburn office building, my office, and I just signed a letter to the clerk of the House asking for my pay to be withheld until the military receive their pay again.
Oh, there you go.
And so, no, we're here. We have nothing to do. We're doing some things. We're in meetings talking about the DACA and other things relative to the FISA issue, and I'm glad to talk with you about that as much as I can. But it is up to Chuck Schumer, so hashtag Schumer shutdown is key for people to involve themselves with. When Debbie Stabenow said several times this past week, that she wanted Congress to act on funding CHIP. Well, doggone it, we did in the House. We fully funded CHIP, not for 5 years or 2 years or 3 years, but for 6 years, the longest CHIP has ever been funded for. That was in our bill. And I saw some of my Democrat colleagues in the House sending out fundraising emails the day of our vote in the House when we passed this and sent it to the Senate saying, tell Congress to fully fund CHIP. Well, when we did in that bill, these same members of Congress voted against it.
Yeah. And that's what... That's what drives me crazy, Tim. I mean, you guys, frankly, this is the first time I've seen what I consider like a really honest, great, big effort by the Republicans. You're reaching across the aisle, which I normally don't endorse, but you guys are reaching across the aisle and giving Democrats things that, frankly, they don't deserve, but you're doing it. And yet the Democrats lie, cheat, steal, whatever, and propagandize that you're not doing this.
It's like Lucy in the football, you know? I mean, she sets you up. They set you up. You know, like you give them what they want, and then they yank it away. Say, no, that's not good enough. I mean, why?
You know, I mean, if you watched the Senate last night, and it was painful to watch, but I watched it right up to the bitter end. And when you saw Chuck Schumer get up and talk about how he had graciously offered to put the wall on the table with the president, that was a bunch of bull. That was what they talked about already in that first meeting together, and they came to an agreement. And here are the four things they came to the agreement on, all of them, Durbin, Schumer, our guys, Kevin McCarthy, Goodlatte, et cetera, that these were the four negotiation points that they would continue working on together in agreement. It was DACA, border security, family reunification, and merit visa. So the wall was already there. This was nothing new that Chuck Schumer gave to the president. And he talked in such compassionate verbiage. Well, it was a lie. Bottom line is, this was already on the table, and the president rightly said, Senator Schumer, I am not negotiating DACA until you are willing to fund the government. We are in negotiations now on DACA, but this does not go on the table of funding the government, and shutting it down is unnecessary. So it is all on Chuck Schumer's hands right now. The only one that can open government up is Chuck Schumer and the Senate Democrats, and that includes our two senators as well, that have to get to the table and say, if I truly believe that the military needs to be funded, then I'd better vote for this this proposal. If I truly believe that our national flood insurance program needs to be funded for places like Puerto Rico, if I truly believe that CHIP, Children's Health Insurance Program, needs to be funded, then they didn't need to vote for it. All of that's in there. We put nothing in our legislation that would be a poison pill like they did back when we shut it down in 2013. They put taxes increases and spending increases that we ultimately had to say, no, Mr. President, we cannot do that. It's so unlike what this is. They had everything that they agreed with, but they still voted against it.
Yeah. So let me ask you, we have a caller, Tim, who wanted you, if you could give us an update on the National Reciprocity Bill, and he's also asking, is there any chance of Mitch McConnell going to 51 votes, and why are they so scared to do that?
Well, we're going to have a heart-to-heart talk with Mitch McConnell and all the Senate Democrats that will be showing up for the first day and a half of our annual Republican conference retreat, where we will meet together for that first day and a half, and then they'll leave us and go to their own retreat site. We had it to a point last year as well. This year, I think my colleagues, including our leadership, are so angry that they are holding on to a filibuster cloture thing that wasn't in place till Aaron Burr shot Hamilton. And cloture became something by mistake. There was no filibuster before all of that took place. The framers and founders, when they put the Senate together, they wanted to be a deliberative body with 100 senators, coming for or two senators from each state. It wasn't 100 at that time, but two senators from each state debating, having the ability to really slow things down, but never to stop it. And that's what this cloture thing has come. So we're going to have some strong words, I'm sure, for our good friends and colleagues from the Senate. But nonetheless, they need to hear it, because this only happened because one man in the minority was able to shut down what went on, because we don't have 60 votes. You could have every Republican vote for what went on last night, and we still wouldn't have the 60 votes to pass it. And so that has to be dealt with. So, yeah, we'll be talking about it.
Which puts to lie the Nancy Pelosi, the Republicans control the Senate, they control the House. No, we don't control the Senate when you have this cloture.
60-vote minimum.
Yeah.
We control the White House, and we control the House. We have a majority, a simple majority in the Senate.
Which isn't good enough.
Because of those rules. And that has to be changed. And if you think that Chuck Schumer won't end filibuster and cloture if he ever becomes the majority leader, then I've got something I'd really like to sell you.
Yeah, exactly.
That he is going to do that, just like Harry Reid was the first one to do the nuclear option on confirmations for judges. So it is going to happen, and it frustrates me that some of our good conservative friends, even in the Senate, still want to hold on to this because we might be back in the minority someday, and we'll need that. Well, I've said to them, then you're thinking like a minority already.
Yep.
If you do the right thing, the American people will send you back. And so this is it's interesting to see New York Times this morning on the front page headlines, Senate Democrats shut down the government.
Yeah, and absolutely, mm-hmm. it's all on
that's
that.
The New York Times.
Yeah, absolutely. So, Tim, how about national reciprocity? Is that going anywhere, or is that going to fall dead in the Senate like everything else?
That's in the Senate.
Okay.
And again, that will probably fall dead in the Senate. They don't have the number of Second Amendment Democrat supporters that we have in the House. We at least have a good complement of Senate Second Amendment or Democrat Second Amendment supporters in the House.
Once again, but, 60 vote.
Yeah. So, and then remind me, Tim, how many bills have you passed in the House that are now sitting waiting for the Senate to do something and they can't do it because they're not getting 60 votes?
It's the last I looked at it. There are 378 votes or bills that we passed that still sit in the House or in the Senate waiting for some type of action. And I have probably right now four or five bills that were mine that passed the House and sit in the Senate with no action. I've had one bill signed by the president thus far this term, and it's frustrating. You do good work in the House. You do regular order, goes through committee. I get bipartisan support. I've always had bipartisan sponsorship on my bills as well, including some of my good friends in Michigan. But the Senate becomes a blockage for us,
yep.
And that is not the way it should be.
Tim, I have a very important question for you. Have you read the memo?
I have.
Okay, now I want you to blink once.
The limitations of radio. Yeah. Doggone it. So Tim, so you've read the memo, and we had a track, but I'm going to let you give your side of the story because you've seen it. What's going on with the FISA memo?
And I will be very probably halting as I speak because I do not want to violate the law.
Yes, and we can appreciate that.
I'm surprised there's no leaks. Where are the leaks? What's wrong with you guys? Come on.
Well, yeah, and Tim, therein lies the rub, right? Everything else gets leaked. If there's any like fake collusion stuff with Russia, it's leaking like a sieve. And yet here we've got something that is supposedly very damning to the Obama DOJ and the Obama FBI, and yet not a word.
Well, guys like me believe that we need a dedicated clandestine force out there for the good of the country and doing the good of the country, and we need to always check out and make sure that clandestine force who are doing intelligence gatherings and actually putting their lives potentially on the line. I mean, real. We're talking of really putting their lives on the line. We do not want to do anything that would put them in more danger by releasing information that would give the bad guys an ability to dig down and ultimately find out who these people are. So we've got to be careful on how we do it. But I can tell you this, as recently as this morning, in talking with the chairman of the House Intelligence Committee, Devin Nunes, that he has heard from me and a large number of my Republican colleagues calling for that memo to be released to the public. I can tell you this, that they are scrubbing that document as carefully as they can to make sure there's nothing that our Democrat colleagues could point to and saying that we walked across the line of what the law says about top secret information, that we gave away any information that could hamper our intelligence gathering capabilities, or that it could be perceived in any direct way as being partisan. There is a process that I believe will be forthcoming and used in the very not-too-distant future that will start the process to give the opportunity for the general public, even the New York Times, to put this document on the front page of the paper.
Oh, that sounds like July. Come on.
As closer to the election as possible.
It also must include the president. Now, I don't think the president would tell us no on it, but we have to make sure that if he did say no for whatever reason, that if we start this, we have the number of votes to do it. It's not a veto override. It would be an override of his no. So all of that has to be scrubbed, but it is moving. And it has the mere fact that it was moved to the point that every member of Congress can read it is very significant.
Okay.
And let me tell you this. It is scary. And when you talk about a deep state, what I read yesterday on the first page scared me. I never thought I would read anything, what I think at least, is worse than Watergate.
Wow.
May I ask a question? Do you suspect we might, if people who are supposedly named or indicated in this document realize that, do you think we might be seeing some resignations shortly? Or is, you know, besides the public release of the document, are we going to see some activity on behalf of our current attorney general? What's his name? The guy we never hear about? Who's that guy again?
Jeff Sessions.
The guy I used to like a lot? Yeah.
You know my feelings about Jeff Sessions. We've talked about that. But yeah. before he became our attorney general. But let me just say that if I believe that not only are the names that I've seen, should they be investigated, but they should be fired. And then?
Prosecuted?
Prosecuted.
Good. Well, that's what I want to hear.
I'm just wondering, are we going to see people leaving shortly and go, uh-oh, that was related to that?
Yeah, I don't know, but if I would think that if I was involved and thought that my name might be part of what this investigation has produced, I might be looking for another country with immunity.
Yeah. Well,
are they destroying documents?
I can't comment on that. I don't know that.
Okay.
All I know is the investigation has gone through a lot of documents.
So here's my one question, Tim. So if this is related to domestic spying, and these are FBI or DOJ guys that are related to spying on the Trump administration or whoever here in the United States of America, how are those domestic spies at risk of being killed by foreign country? Well, maybe it's the Clinton Foundation. Okay. Never mind. I'll take the question back.
Suicide. Two shots to the back of the head.
That's right. So, all right. Never mind. I answered my own question on that one. Well, Tim, we've got Mark from Pinckney who's got a question about Homeland Security. Derek, can you bring in Mark to ask that Homeland Security question? Tim, go ahead.
Hello.
Or Mark, go ahead.
Hey, how are you? Hey, Tim, how are you today?
I am well.
That's good.
I'm a lot,
hey,
I'm a
you're
lot,
talking about the... What's that?
I said I'm a lot better off than the wounded warrior lying in a bed in...
there you go.
In Walter Reed, whose wife just found out that while her
she's not getting a paycheck,
suffering from all of the injuries he has and loss of limbs, is not getting paid. And I'm talking about a real live person.
I'm not just exactly. And I'm just totally appalled that the DACA was put into all of this, and I've called your office numerous times about that. Don't let them back you up. Stonewall them. Do whatever we need to do. These people are here illegally. But what I, Tim, the question that I've got, you're talking about deep state and all of that. Are you familiar with Project Pelican? And what that is it's the... down to Cape Fort Lauderdale. It's the port container where all the container ships and all of that come in. That is just got a 35-year lease, and who that is basically leased to is Tainer, and Tainer is actually ran and by Saddam Hussein's nuclear physicist and all of that that shouldn't be doing that, and it basically got stuck in through the back door. And wasn't and went through the security committees that it was supposed to.
I'm not familiar with. I'm not familiar to any degree about it, other than hearing about it. But no, I'm not.
Okay.
I'm
not, and the way that I found out about it is, I drive a school bus, and there was a kid that was asking about pelicans, and I looked up brown pelicans, and that's actually how I ended up finding out about it. And the more that you read about it, this is plain and simple scary.
The Pelican.
You know, where Homeland Security says that, you know, the container ships that come in, they can't check every one of the containers. And there could be who knows what coming in it, and now we've got you know, people that are linked to the Russians, the North Koreans, Chinese, everything else. Some of Obama's college friends that are Pakistanis that aren't supposed to be here in the country, and it's scary. This needs to be looked into.
Yeah, we've got similar problems out in California at
exactly
ports that the Chinese control. And
correct.
That's again why the other side did not want Trump to be elected, and they thought he wouldn't. But
well, they didn't stuff the ballot boxes full enough, did they?
they didn't well enough, but. We'll see what comes out, and I think right now, because of the makeup of Congress and the White House, a lot of stuff they thought they could hide will be coming out, and it'll take probably years. And that's why we need to be resolute in making sure that this objective continues. This isn't a witch hunt. This is a hunt for enemies.
This is a deep state. They're trying to take our country over.
Yeah.
This isn't a McCarthy thing. This is real necessary work to make sure our country is safe and secure. It's not Republican, it's not Democrat, it's American. But right now, I think we have the right people in office that will at least not look the other way.
Yeah. Well, great call, Mark. I appreciate you bringing that up. Send me an email on that, would you?
Okay. All right. I will try.
Appreciate it. So Tim, that brings up another question then that seems to have fallen off the radar, and I'm sure the Democrats and the media want it to. What's going on with the Awan brothers and the investigation with Debbie Wasserman Schultz and the whole IT scandal that went in? That's kind of just fallen off the map.
The national security issue that was. Yes.
There are still investigations being done. I mean, there are so many investigations going on now.
It's a growth industry.
Because of the continual pushback, sadly, the Intelligence Committee has always been a very nonpartisan committee. You have Democrats, Republicans on it. The majority party has the chairman. But it's always been perceived as, let's leave our titles and associations at the door because we're doing a great work in these very closed off rooms for the good of this country, and let's not be caught making a mistake because we got political. But we're finding this year that has ended, and you're having all or the majority of Democrats voting against things that they would normally in the past have worked together with the Republicans on. And it is a tenuous situation, so you've got investigations going on that go back to a lot of names that have kind of vanished from the public thought processes for a while, but those investigations are continuing.
Great. Well, Tim, thank you so much for calling in special this month.
Thanks.
And anytime you've got something that you want to get out, make sure you give us a holler. Love to have you on the show. It's always informative, and we really appreciate you talking to the listeners.
Okay. Trump shut down.
Schumer shut down.
Schumer
shut down. Yes. Sure.
Sure
we'll edit that out, Tim. We'll edit that out.
All right. Thanks, Tim. I appreciate it. We'll talk again. And to everyone else, we'll see you next week.
Take care. Great week.